Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again. Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
But every time I do, my family thinks I'm crazy. The hollow earth, UFOs, aliens, and painting. Throw it in the water, this red sky is daily. When I talk about these things, they think I'm crazy. There's no escaping anyone, the evil that we're facing. Illuminati mind control, they're sacrificing babies. The end of days, but anyways, my family thinks I'm crazy.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the My Family Thinks I'm Crazy podcast, coming to you with a special edition 4th of July episode with yours truly, Mystic Mark, and my good pal, Juan Ayala from the Juan on Juan podcast. If you're listening to this when it comes out, I hope you have a wonderful weekend. I hope you have a wonderful 4th of July if you're here in the United States. If you're not here in the United States, I hope you have a wonderful time doing whatever you're doing this weekend. And if you're not listening to this when it comes out, well, hey, thanks for listening in the future. There are other great episodes for you to tune into after this one. So without further ado, enjoy, and thank you for tuning in to the My Family Thinks I'm Crazy podcast. Right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome.
Hold on. All right, now you can start it.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the My Family Thinks I'm Crazy podcast with the one-on-one podcast's own Juan Ayala. And depending on what we talk about today, who knows, this might end up being an episode of Illuminati Confirmed. So if so, happy 4th of July. Illuminati confirmed style.
Illuminati confirmed.
Juan, you're the man. It's been too long since we podcasted last. What have you been up to? How have you been?
Haven't been up to much, bro. Just been living life, working. That's pretty much it. I'm being honest. I've been doing a weekly podcast with Narco Longo. We are doing a series on movies either set in Florida or filmed in Florida. And we've been making our way through those movies. So If you don't catch me on the RSS feed, which I've been taking a break, you can catch me on YouTube over on the Juan Juan podcast YouTube channel or the Juan Juan media or on the Old World Florida YouTube page every Thursday night. Most Thursday nights we took off last week and this week too, because Narco is traveling. We have been up to that pretty much, just watching movies, decoding movies, bringing out the conspiracies and esoteric lore in it.
Cool.
Pretty fun.
Cool, bro. Well, glad to see you're still podcasting. And yeah, man, it's been a wild ride for me trying to keep up with the podcast with everything going on in my life. So I do have some really incredible guests planned on the horizon. So audience, don't be worried. Don't think, oh my gosh, what's happening to my favorite podcast? But yeah, sometimes we need to recruit the homies, and I had to get Juan on the horn for this podcast because it's been
bottom of the barrel.
It's been too long. Well, no, sometimes, see, this is like taking a day off from work because I'm just hanging out with my friend. So I hope you feel the same way. But anyways, I was thinking, considering what we talked about last, we might...
What did we cover last? Where's Chris at?
Well, not on Illuminati Confirmed, but in our last podcast we did together, we were talking about Shakespeare, we were talking about John Dee, we were talking about the theater of the mind, and then the last time I spoke with you on the phone, I told you that I found this book like within a couple days from that. So I thought, oh, what a coincidence.
As the one by Francis Yates?
Yeah, Theater of the World.
And oh, yes.
There's some really interesting stuff in here, but... As I was working on what will become the next merch for the My Family Thinks I'm Crazy podcast, we got some really crazy stuff going on over here. I think I updated you about all that last time we talked, but I found a quote in a book that I'm just kind of looking for inspiration. I find this quote that matches up perfectly with Theater of the World. So, you know, this is going to be an episode where we sort of just get into whatever comes up. So let's let this sort of set the stage. I want to read this paragraph for you. So it says, "From Outside Lies Magic" by John Stilgo, professor of landscape history at Harvard University. "The whole concatenation of wild and artificial things, the natural ecosystem as modified by people over the centuries, the built environment layered over layers, take it in, and quickly it becomes the theater that intrigues, fascinates, and above all expands any mind focused on it. Outside lies utterly ordinary space open to any casual explorer willing to find the extraordinary. Outside lies unprogrammed awareness that at times becomes directed serendipity." So I wanted to read that to you. It's a big part of Michael Hoffman's book, but it also connects to what we were speaking about in the last conversation we had. So before I go and ramble on, any thoughts that come to mind when you hear that paragraph?
It almost, so what I appreciate about Francis Yates' work, right? So Theater of the World, I think it focuses mostly on the Elizabethan part of it all. She also wrote another book called The Art of Memory. And, right, it kind of touches on the way that these theaters are laid out and eventually the evolution of these theaters, which become, in my opinion, I mean, there are still stage plays, but the archetypal stage that we all know about, right, was inspired and pioneered by all these guys. Now, what's interesting about that is that quote that you read is about, right, the outside world and kind of sort of the way I see it now as far as when it comes to theater, which evolved into cinema, right? That's how you have the silver screen, and that's the reason why movie theaters are laid out the way they are. It's interesting because in a way, it kind of evolved into a McUltra sort of situation to where it's not about looking outside the box, right? It's not about looking out. It's more of like, what's that one movie? Is it the Clockwork Orange, or what's the other one that people talk about where they hold the dude's eyes open and they, is that, that's Clockwork Orange, isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah, you got it.
Where they're programming people, right? And that's what they do nowadays with media. We see a lot of woke stuff and Disney movies and things of this nature. So it's kind of evolved and it's been, in my opinion, weaponized. But the way that Yates talks about it, it was almost like a, she doesn't flat out call it like an occult ritual, but she pretty much says in one of her books, I don't know if it's The Art of Memory or The Theater of the World, that pretty much she speculates that some of these theaters could have been laid out in a geometric form in order to invoke a higher essence, if you will. And this ties into Pythagorean palaces and all these other things. So I think they took that and they perverted it, because now you go to a movie and it kind of dumbs you down. It kind of suppresses your energy, suppresses your consciousness. And a lot of the stuff that they pump out, especially with reality TV, if you look at it, it's like brain rot, right? Sometimes, and I'm gonna get slack for this, but like my wife likes to watch The Housewives of blah blah blah, right? Whatever housewife it is,
right?
And I'm like, what do you like about that? Like, you're not learning anything, you're not getting anything of value from it. Like, what do you? And she's like, I like the drama, I like to keep up with, like, and it's brain rot. Like, that's all it is. It's to dumb people down, suppress them down. So, you know, it's interesting that you read that quote, and it kind of was talking about, you know, looking outside and everything and kind of breaking out in a way. But my interpretation of all this work is it's been used and perverted now, you know, the stuff now.
That's why I wanted to ask you to get your take. And I had a feeling we would sort of align there. I mean, after all, this is Illuminati confirmed. But yeah, outside lies unprogrammed awareness that at times becomes directed serendipity. I think the lack of understanding around that is primarily how people are manipulated. You know, you keep mm-hmm. these kind of things a secret, and certain people can use it to their advantage. It's not something you can keep a secret altogether. People naturally, you know, discover this or find people writing about it, and it inspires them. But there's something about this directed serendipity that I think when you look at some of the crazier conspiracy theory stuff, that's what they're saying is happening, but for the worst possible outcome, right? That, you know, because oftentimes you hear some of these conspiracy theories and the average person is like, that's too good to be true. There's no way, you know, somebody was able to get all of that done or single-handedly pull that off, right? And
yeah,
all sorts of arguments.
We didn't build these buildings. They were already Tartaria, you know?
Well, yeah, there's a whole different section. But with this quote that Michael Hoffman includes in Secret Societies and Psychological Warfare, it just reminded me of that book by Francis Yates. And he kind of goes further with that quote and talks about how the establishment creates a mind virus that essentially, you know, their goal is to create a mind virus that will condition people in a sort of self-sabotaging way, where once you put it out there, you don't have to, you know, administer the propaganda or the MK Ultra stuff. It just
memes, bro.
Right. And you mentioned watching these movies with Narco, and unfortunately that is the medium. I mean, television, movies, this is the medium for how they program people. It's like a virus, basically. It says that Michael Hoffman says the virus containing this meme infects the host with the sense that it is useless to resist central establishment control, or it posits a counter-cultural alternative to such control, which is actually a counterfeit, covertly emanating from the establishment itself. That the blackening pollution of the earth is as unavoidable as death itself. That extinction, evolution of the species of human beings are inevitable. And that the re-inhabitation of the earth by the old gods is our stellar scientific destiny. So this is Michael Hoffman's research. We don't need to go too far into all of that because I have talked to Michael Hoffman on the show about this stuff. But what do you think of that? Because, you know, the more I see what's going on with Trump, the way he's sort of turned his back on the MAGA crowd that voted him in, you know, a lot of those people thought he was going to be anti-war, myself included. I don't know how I'm going to feel this 4th of July, honestly. I don't know how proud I am to be in this country if this is what's going on. So yeah, what are your thoughts on that and this notion that they're sort of entraining us with these events to feel hopeless? I mean a lot of people are using the phrase World War III very casually these days. Mm-hmm.
You know, I wasn't really a believer and I'm not really antiseptic, if you get what I'm saying. But when you start to see the patterns emerge, and you start to wonder, you go and you look at back at history and you start to think about certain events that happen. And in my opinion, you know, when we talk about in this conspiracy crowd, there's a group, right? They might be real. Now, I'm not saying it's the Tengu crowd, For those that know about the Tengu, right? That's something from our Thursday nights. You're going to have to tune in to learn about the Tengu. But there's usually a group following, you know, pulling the strings, right? And you know, how you're saying that he turned his back on. That's why I've never voted, bro, because it's just another politician. Doesn't matter who, what, when. It's another politician. They lie. And I remember it was anti-war. And then all of a sudden, you see, what's interesting is, we're talking about the spread of memetics, which memetics is the transfer of information. Now, it's interesting that memes are a thing which can convey very serious ideas in a comical way, which I think is even more dangerous, because if you can, comedy is a way of influencing people because they're more susceptible, right? So, you know, if people are more in a more relaxed state, that's why I think that the occult crowd of today are comedians, bro. Now, I'm not pointing any fingers at any particular comedians, but I think that the agents nowadays is this comedy crowd, right? The Rogan types, because you can't tell me you're going to get at that level and not have some sort of handler or something. And I know everyone says that, right? That's the main thing in this community, where like if somebody gets more downloads than you or whatever it is, oh, he's a fed. Like, no, I'm talking about legitimately, because if we look back at history and you look at guys like Crowley or John Dee, right? The first 007, a lot of these guys were occultists, and they were part of the crown. They assisted the crown, allegedly. What a better way to infiltrate a city or a country by being like, oh, I'm going to open up a Freemasonic lodge here. Oh, yeah, freedom of religion or whatever it is. Freedom of blah, blah, blah. Usually the people who join those secret societies are influential people, right? A lot of people, and that's a main conspiracy point as well. It's like, oh, they're all Freemasons. Yeah, so think about that. If you go to a country that you want to get the inside scoop on, you set up a Freemasonic lodge, which Crowley set up lodges and shit, you know, in Mexico and a whole bunch of different places, right? He's got a history. You get people to join that lodge, and hey, it's just a bunch of bros hanging out, right? Meanwhile, they're connected, they're collecting intelligence all at the same time, right? And they're getting the dirt on those people. If you look at the whole Jeffrey thing, think about that in that aspect of collecting intelligence, collecting data, and what is data? Memes, right? So that's why I call them memetic magicians, because they're able to take information and they're able to inject it into society and create what? Culture. When you inject a virus or a bacteria into something, you create, right? They do a culture. That's what they call it. You know, a culture of blah, blah, blah. And it creates, and that's exactly what they're doing with a lot of shit. Like, think about like the craziest thing, especially nowadays, this woke ideology. I've watched movies that have, and again, I have nothing against whatever you do behind closed doors between two consenting adults. I don't care. The thing is, when they start pushing it on you, that's the annoying part, right? When you don't, I've seen movies, bro, where they add, I've seen anime where they add stuff that adds nothing to the plot of the story, but it's there because you know it's there to fill an agenda. It does nothing else to the story. For example, the Last of Us, the latest season, where they dropped off 50% of their viewership because they went like full woke with the main character. But even in the first season, there was two dudes. I was like, whatever, I can bear this. I can watch this. And second season, they just turned it up to 10, but I've turned stuff off. And so the whole point of this is programming in a sort of way. And once you, how Michael Hoffman is saying, once one person is quote unquote infected by it, it does spread, because your ideas and your thoughts, everything, you spread that. Right now, we're spreading our ideas, our thoughts on this podcast to other people. That's going to influence them, either positively or negatively, right? So people can take it a good way or a bad way, but point is that you influence people. And now, the conspiracy is it all occult? Is it part of the occult? The way that you... grammar is came from the word grimoire, a book of spells, and that's why, like, all that shit, like, it makes sense, right? Is it a cult though? I don't know. And that's the part of like reality, where can you bend reality to your will by using words? Absolutely. And I've talked about what I've dubbed grammatical entities, where we've talked about William Burroughs' work, right? And the whole concept of chaos magic and the concept of using the cut-up method to kind of transcend reality and glitch out of the matrix. Those are all words. Those are stories that are being told that have a higher effect, right? But I can't prove it to you. But if you look at history, think about it. It's all been ideas, right? And it goes back down to the core of it, where it's left versus right. Conservative versus liberal. What do they have? They have their own thoughts, ideas. They have their own policies. They have each party, right? And people jump into those archetypes. They jump into those stereotypes. They jump into those ideologies, and they wear them. Like, they wear them like a skin suit, and they become that. Now, a majority of people, not everyone, right? Not a lot of people vote. A lot of people aren't political. Probably 90% of the people I run into in the real world probably don't care, because why? They're trying to live their regular life without caring about politics, right? But for a majority of people, it does matter. So it has an effect on a portion of the population. How much of the population, we don't ever, you know, we won't ever really know. But if we look at it in the sphere of like the United States, which has a population of what, 300 million people, 250 million people? How many people are in the U.S.? 200 and something million people, right?
It's like past 300 by now.
It's past 300. Well, probably because the border was open for the last 4 years and they're just letting all the sleeper cells in. But you get what I'm saying. Like, point being that, yes, I think that there is... The conspiracy is there a group at the center of this all orchestrating the downfall of an empire, which is the U.S. or whatever, or the world? They're trying to destroy reality in the world as is, right? Like, that's what they're trying to do.
Mm.
And now, similar to 2001 or 2003, whenever we went to Baghdad, weapons of mass destruction. Now it's, what was the new one? They can't have enough. I forgot what wordage they were using, but it evolved on Twitter, bro. You saw when Trump tweeted, we're going to stay out of it. We're not going to do anything about it. And then to boom, like overnight was like, yeah, we're going to strike them down, because it's like, whoa, dude, you said you were going to stay out of the whole thing. But yeah. Again, think about what's at the center of that whole thing. Who started it?
Right.
What are they known for?
Yeah.
So there's a lot of conspiracies and things going on all at once. How do I think it's a grand ritual? A lot of people say, I don't know, dude, because I've researched the occult for a very long time. I've put many, many hours into it. But there are two things I can't prove to you. I can't prove to you the occult is real, and I can't prove to you the homunculus is real, right? We read about it. We talk about it. Is it a real thing, though? I don't know. I'm still on the fence about it.
I think it's something that's alive in the hearts of women, children, and men all across the country, Juan. I think it's as real as you. It's as real as Santa Claus, baby. As long as you believe in that red, white, and blue, the homunculus is up your ass and it's inside of you. You know,
hey.
It's the American way, goddammit. So you better send your tax dollars to bomb the shit out of Iran.
That's right. Yeah.
Still stuck on your point about the sleeper cells. You're right, dude. I've been calling them sombrero cells for a long time now, so... Because they sleep underneath this.
The scariest part is, dude, that we have no control over any of this. Like, as a person, like as people, right? We're just citizens. We're here.
Well, we do have control. We have our sovereignty to dictate where we live and what we do. I mean, for people on the East Coast, there's a whole sort of fallout from everything that happened with the pandemic, the COVID-19 atrocities. There was a big fallout. There were a ton of people that moved out of New York City, and my hometown is completely different, dude. Like, I go down there.
Yeah, but it's people who voted for their policies in their city that made it a shithole. So they go to other places, right, to again pollute other places.
So that's what I'm saying. So they went there. So what did I do? I left. I went somewhere where there aren't those types of people, because they're not moving to this part of the state because it's inconvenient for them to live here. So but it's convenient for me because those people don't come here, and there's not a lot of like space that can be developed because it's mountainous, and the types of people that live around here come to this area for the same reason. So I've noticed just in the past couple of years, like, oh, taking back my sovereignty, it doesn't matter like how many pandemics they throw at me from up here. Like from up here, I feel a lot safer. And hey, if it changes, I'll just keep going north. I mean, shit, we're apparently moving into some kind of polar shift or some sort of global warming type situation. So the further north you go, it'll be probably a similar climate to what you're used to, right? You kind of got to go the opposite way. So that's where my head's at with all of that. But I actually had a different sort of idea for where we might go with this conversation, Juan, given that you're somebody who's been watching movies lately and given that you have some connections yourself with some pretty high-level Hollywood types. I wanted to investigate with you live on the air here, deep dive into the man, the myth, the legend, Steven Seagal. What do you think of that?
Steven Seagal, to be honest, what's the last movie I saw with Steven Seagal?
Well, first of all, Steven Seagal's movies are incredible. I just watched On Deadly Ground recently.
Wasn't he going crazy?
Well, here's the thing. That's what the mainstream media wants you to think. But wouldn't that, as a conspiracy theorist or somebody who thinks outside the box, make you question maybe there's something that they're trying to discredit Steven for getting into? And I'll point some of this out. In 2017, Seagal collaborated with a former chair of the Arizona Republican Party, Tom Morrissey, in writing a self-published conspiracy thriller novel, The Way of the Shadow Wolves, The Deep State and the Hijacking of America, which featured Tohono Shadow Wolf, tracker working for U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement to foil a plot by Mexican drug cartels and the deep state to smuggle in Islamic terrorists to the United States through the U.S.-Mexico border. Sound clear, Juan? It sounds a lot like, what was that, Fast and Furious that Obama was doing, where he's trading guns with the Mexican cartel and they had all these other little projects they were working on together?
Is there proof of that? Really?
Yeah, bro. That's all legit. And Seagal, I think he might have known about that already, because that was already in the news by 2017, I believe, because Trump was in office. So yeah, they would have already been talking about Obama's stuff. So yeah. Yeah.
But here's my thing, bro. Right? Because I like to be a rational person. I like to play devil's advocate.
Right. We know that.
If this is a group that is highly secretive, that is trying to rule reality or trying to rule the world, if that's spiritually or monetarily or whichever way, right? Let's just think outside the box. Why would they follow a script? Did they write the script? And if they did write a script, because write this book, which I didn't even know about.
No. I think Seagal just knew because people were reporting on it, and then he took advantage of that and wrote a book about it. That's all. It's not like some predictive type thing where like he wrote
the
book and then all of a sudden it was true. No. I might have just explained it.
But it seemed weird. No. But here's the problem, dude, that sometimes, right, because we talk about movies and these things, sometimes it seems like that. So which is it? Does life imitate art or does art imitate life? You get what I'm saying?
Well, and Seagal has been all over Russia for the past couple years, and at least a decade, since like 2014, around then he became friends with like Putin and started doing all this major stuff with Russia. So I think he might be like super high level conspiracy theorist, and he's seeing the writing on the wall, the films, and we're gonna get into what his films are about.
I've never seen any of his movies, bro. I'll be honest with you. I looked them up. I haven't seen...
Dude, all of his movies are about like conspiracy type stuff. I mean, I can't speak for like the newer ones.
Is this another like Nick Cage, bro, where he's trying to tell us the truth?
Yes.
Should I get a Steven Seagal friggin' pillow?
We're putting it out there in the universe that myself and you will be sitting in a room with Steven Seagal within the next year, interviewing him about this. So this is where the deep dive begins, but this is how it goes, because You know, life is moving so fast. We're in the apocalypse now. We're in the fire cycle of the Kali Yuga. So let's recruit the man, Steven Seagal himself, to help us. So let's start with his first movie, Above the Law. Do you know what Above the Law is about?
No.
So it's about an expert martial artist who's recruited by the CIA during the Vietnam War while serving in covert operations on the Vietnamese-Cambodian border, aka the Golden Triangle, where they were smuggling all the drugs from. He became disgusted with Agent Kurt Zagan, who tortures prisoners. A standoff occurred when Toscani, which is his name, Nico Toscani, that's his character in the film, Toscani tries to stop him, and he leaves the CIA. So basically, he's a rogue CIA agent who leaves the CIA because he doesn't like the way the CIA is treating prisoners. What else do you need to know about this movie other than he's on the money right off the bat, dude? So why do you think he's been mocked and people make fun of Aikido? And it's because there's a huge disinfo campaign around anybody who tries to shed light on the truth. They make him look like a freaking fool, like he's just making all this shit up. And you know what really inspired this was when I had my man John DeLuca on the show, and he was telling me about how Aikido is actually a spiritual martial art and that the physical aspect of it is not the main focus. The main focus is the spiritual enlightenment. And there's a whole strange story about the origin of Aikido. I think we talked a little bit about it when I told you to watch the Investiture of the Gods movie, the Chinese movie.
Dude.
Which we never had a chance to talk about.
I want to say this. I told you I watched it, right?
Yeah.
That's probably one of my favorite movies I've ever watched.
Isn't it incredible?
Holy shit, bro. That was crazy. I was locked in from the story, the everything. I was reading the subtitles the whole time, and I was like, maybe I'll just put this on and I won't even care.
Background for how that movie was made?
No, I don't, but what? Yeah, I meant to tell you that incredible movie.
All right, this is perfect. See, we didn't know what we were going to talk about. We need to talk about this too. So we're going to get back to Steven Seagal, but let's take a right-hand turn here. Turning the podcast car real quick into a different direction. So yeah, Investiture of the Gods, that's what the movie is based on. It's got like a fancy Chinese name. I don't think that's the same, but it's based on this 16th century Chinese novel called The Investiture of the Gods. Mm. And it's basically like, what would you call it? An illuminated manuscript, but like written by somebody who was apparently channeling the information. So,
what?
Yeah. So then
what's it called? The Investiture?
Yeah. INVESTITURE.
There's also a TV series by that name.
Yeah, it's the whole thing's become really popular because when that director made that movie, because he's a really great director. So
okay, so I see it here. It's book two, Harvard University's Rare Books Collection.
Yep.
From the 16th century. Okay.
So it's basically about this like pretty pivotal time in Chinese history when King Zhou of the Shang dynasty is overthrown, and then that establishes the Zhou dynasty. That's confusing. So King Zhou is the last ruler of the Shang dynasty, but then Jifa takes over and establishes the Zhou dynasty. So whatever, maybe that's his brother or something, but yeah. So it starts off there, but it incorporates all these different, as you saw in the film, mythological aspects of Chinese culture. And, you know, it's more than just a mythology. Like, so for a long time, people in China considered this like the history of China. It wasn't just like, so, you know, mm-hmm. the way we consider folklore and myth now, like, oh yeah, but it's silly. So, but there's some really like, I don't know, surreal and explicit, morose aspects to the, which is a lot different than what we're used to with like Grimm's fairy tales, the way they're depicted through Disney. Like people know like Grimm's fairy tales are much more like gory and dark than like the kids' versions of them. Well, this is like kind of the same thing where like there's a possessed spirit that takes over this guy, and there's like this fox spirit basically ruins this entire guy's life because he falls in love with this, you know, possessed whore. Excuse my
got that fox sissy, bro.
Yeah, dude, he got that fox sissy and went wild, dude. He went ape shit for the fox sissy, dude. So yeah, the Investiture of the Gods is incredible movie, so I highly recommend it. But yeah,
so the name of the movie we watch is called Creation of the Gods One Kingdom of Storms, and there is a part two which I've been meaning to.
It's hard to watch, dude. You can't find it yet because maybe I should try again now that it's been a while. But right around the time I watched the first one, the second one had just come out. So there's only like super pirated versions of it.
Yes.
Online. It might still be that way. But thank you for telling me the real title because, yeah, I know it's based on this novel, which that's the word we've been saying, Investiture. Which is a very Chinese thing, like the Investiture of the Gods. Like, I don't know. That just feels very like a man's version of a mythology. Anyways. All right, ladies and gentlemen, let's take a quick break to thank our sponsors. First and foremost, Brain Supreme, your microdosing dream team. That's right. Brain Supreme has all the resources you need if you're curious about what microdosing can do to boost your daily cognitive abilities. You need an edge at work. You need an edge on your workout. You need an edge creatively. Brain Supreme has got it for you. This is not a get you high product. This is a wellness nootropic blend, okay? Specifically designed to enhance your functional mental abilities. So without wasting any of your time, go to brainsupreme.co. Listen to my interviews with the founder, Adam Schell, and make an educated and informed decision about microdosing with brainsupreme.co. Use the promo code CRAZY at checkout to save. Speaking of informed decisions, how can you make an informed decision if the internet you're browsing isn't secure, it isn't safe, and worst, it's lying to you? Is your internet lying to you? Or worse, spying on you? No longer with Above Phone. That's right. Above Phone has a complete line of phones, tablets, and laptops, which are all designed to keep you safe while browsing the web. These are security-oriented devices by conspiracy theorists for conspiracy theorists, okay? So go to abovephone.com and check it out. They've got regular phones, tablets, and laptops as far as the hardware is speaking. But what's special, what's unique is the software. The software is designed to be 100% transparent and let you know which apps that you're downloading are spying on you. And it even gives you alternatives to use so that you don't have to rely on apps that are spying on you. So if you want to learn more about that, go to abovephone.com and use the promo code CRAZY at checkout. All right, now last for our sponsors is VibeMed X. I love VibeMed X. I take their Shilajit tablets once a day. The Shilajit has me feeling incredible, and I'm even noticing things on my foot and my skin start to clear up. I had this weird rash on the ankle of my foot, my left foot, and thanks to this Shilajit resin that I rub on there and some Shilajit tablets that I take weekly, it's all gone. It's literally cleared up. I would take before and after pictures, but I didn't take the before. So I'll just send you guys a picture of my clean, healthy feet for just the low price of $99.99. So anyways, enough about that. VibeMedX.com, promo code CRAZY to save on your first batch of the highest quality Shilajit available. If you don't know what Shilajit is, go listen to my interview with Ron Morit, the founder of VibeMedX. He was just a guest on Tinfoil Hat.
And he's a great guy. I'm actually going to be at the Sheila Jam Festival this month. So stay tuned for more information about that. And we'll be right back to this conversation with my buddy Juan after this quick break to our dynamic ads. Hey, this is Mystic Mark with a quick message about Hims and how they can help you men in the bedroom. That's right, ED can be uncomfortable, but that's why Hims provides access to a comfortable solution with an all online process and personalized treatment options. That's right, Hims is changing men's healthcare by providing you with access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. The process is 100% online, so there's no need to see a doctor. Just fill out the intake form on their site and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships directly to you for free. No insurance needed, and one low price covers everything from treatments to ongoing care. With hundreds of thousands of trusted subscribers, Hims can help you find the ED option that works for you. Start your Hims online visit today at hims.com/crazy. That's hims.com/crazy for your personalized ED treatment options. That's hims.com/crazy. The featured products include compounded products, which are not approved nor verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality by the FDA. Prescription required. See website details for restrictions and important safety information. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. Thank you for tuning into this episode of the My Family Thinks I'm Crazy podcast. I'm your host, Mystic Mark. And I want to bring attention to one of my favorite sponsors. That's Mood. Mood thinks cannabis should be accessible, affordable, convenient, and transparent. But most importantly, they believe, and I believe, in supporting the American farmers who make all of this possible. That's right, made in America. Like the outfit that I have on, my t-shirt, my Hard Enco jeans, all 100% made in America. So why would the cannabis I'm smoking be any different? That's right, Mood created an online source for 100% federally legal cannabis grown on small, pesticide-free American farms. You can't beat that, folks. Go American, go local if you can. Keep it within our borders. Support this country. And I'm going to support you by giving you 20% off your entire purchase for first-time buyers only. Just use the promo code CRAZY at mood.com. That's mood.com. MOOD.com. I'm telling you, folks, Mood stands behind everything with an industry-leading 100-day satisfaction guarantee. And as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with the code CRAZY. So head to mood.com, browse their amazing selection of functional gummies, and find the perfect gummy for whatever you're dealing with. Remember to use the promo code CRAZY at checkout to save 20% off your order of American cannabis. Go and check it out today at mood.com, and we'll be right back to this episode in just a moment.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
So yeah, there's a bunch of really crazy stuff in there, but I don't know if you saw the trailer for the second one, but that's where they include the four saints of the nine dragons. Do you know about that?
No,
So they're basically the Nephilim, like huge giant beings that fight on the king's behalf, or fight with some dynasty. But yeah.
And if you think about this, right? So we're talking, and I've always said this, that all religion, all belief really is held down and held together by writings. Right. So, you know, to go back to the beginning of what we were talking about, you know, when we started the episode about words having power and effect over reality in a way that is true, because all religions are essentially just books and manuscripts and old scrolls that they found before. Right. And just record keeping that have been passed down through generations to people. And I mean, think about that religion. All major world religions are based off of what? Books, writing. That's all it comes down to. Like, that's all it comes down to in reality. And then people start to believe the mythology or the historical concept. I mean, you see it time and time again, right? They found the tomb of Jesus Christ, or they found a bone fragment of him, or whatever it is. Like, they, you know, that we've gone back and forth about this concept of, was Jesus a real person? Was Muhammad a real person? Was Buddha a real person? Like, that's been debated. That's been talked about. And we still, let's be real for one second. I know the religious people are going to get worked up, but we don't have definitive proof, or else everyone would be Christian. If we had definitive proof that JC was a real person, I'm not saying he wasn't. Don't get me wrong. Right. I believe in Jesus Christ. I'm a Christian. But let's be real. Why are there other denominations? Why are there other religions if ours is the one? You get what I'm saying? And that's something I've always battled with since I was a freaking kid. I was like, wait a minute. So if somebody across the world has never heard of Jesus, are they going to die? Are they going to hell? How does that work? Right. But then they have loopholes like, oh, no, when babies die, they go into the space before the heaven because they didn't know any better. Right. Like, they always have to find, and it was an amendment. Right. We put an amendment into that clause and now they're covered. Like, really? And then, you have this other group that likes to trick their God. And like do things to kind of maneuver their way around God.
But what do you think of some of these aspects of the movie? I mean, particularly the fox spirit. Like, I've heard about the fox spirit legends. It's sort of like, you know, in the world of Catholicism and Christianity, possession, right? It's similar, but this kind of takes on a different aspect where the fox spirit typically doesn't just possess anybody. It possesses a attractive woman who then targets somebody who has money or wealth or power. So it just kind of lines up a little more accurately with like what we talk about in the West, where the elite are possessed by these dark forces, and maybe, you know, the fact that they have all this wealth and riches attracts that type of energy to them. And
you know, foxes look this thievish, right? Like that's usually the way that they're portrayed. Mm. You know, you sly fox, you. The fox, I believe, is one of the only animals that steals eggs. Like, I learned that from Narco Longo, where they actually steal eggs and they feed on the eggs of other animals.
I saw it happen once. I was driving, I saw a fox running down the road with what looked like a tennis ball in its mouth, and I turned my car around and watched it. It went over to a hillside in the back of this restaurant parking lot, dug a little hole, put the egg in there, dug it back, and then ran off and went to wherever he got that egg from to get another one. And I watched the whole thing. It was pretty funny. But yeah, man, I don't doubt that these kind of things have happened, you know, in the past and could happen in the future. There's another movie from Asia. I don't know if it's, I think it's Korea. It might not be China. I'm not sure.
So real quick, right, to touch on what you said. And I know this is really basic, but what if a lot of these stories are, because for some people, and we'll use the Bible as an example. For some people, the Bible is their Bible literalist. Like, they believe the Bible 100%, right? You have the 6,000 or 7,000 year creationist, where it's like, you know, you have mainstream scientism that says, no, it was formed over millions and millions of years. You have people in the biblical community who go, no, it was created in 6,000 or 7,000 years, whichever one it is. And this is how it went, just this is how it is, right? Because of the story of Genesis and blah, blah, blah. But what if? Because this movie, I love the visuals. I loved everything about this movie. Incredible movie. What if it was meant to be symbolic? Like, at what level do we go, okay, this is symbolic and this is all it is? And what you were saying about the fox and all that, what if that's talking about aspects of society and they're symbolized by using a fox demon or using this other stuff? Because another thing that I always wonder about, I think about all the time, where it's like, if everything is as supernatural and as mystical and as crazy as it is in the Bible, or even the Mahabharata or the Bhagavad Gita, whatever it is, why aren't those things still around today? Why isn't reality as magical and as supernatural as it is in these books? Why? Right? And I know people go, oh, miracles happen every day. I'm sure miracles happen every day. But why don't we see more of it? You get what I'm saying? Like, why don't we see more supernatural? Because think about it, dude. If somebody nowadays, in today's 2025, freaking rose up from the dead, people wouldn't believe it, right? Number one, and they'd probably be like, oh, he's possessed by something. They wouldn't accept it. Think about that. Like, for one, how crazy that idea is. Somebody rising from the dead.
That literally was what I was about to bring up. There's a movie that's just, the title's escaping me, but it's a horror film based on a true story where this whole family got possessed by some sort of entity, and it caused them to basically give up eating food and start eating their own feces. Is just disgusting. And I'm sorry I didn't give the audience a warning about that. But unfortunately, the daughter of this family was found dead in the home. And the home had been like completely painted black on the inside. The windows had been covered. There are all these shrines on every corner of the house and all this really strange occult stuff. Obviously, this was in Asia, so it was all like sort of Buddhist style.
Incantation from Taiwan? Yes.
Incantation is in Taiwan. See, I knew it was in China, but it wasn't Korea either. It was Taiwan. So yeah, so this film is based on true story, and they find this, unfortunately, this girl dead in this home. And I believe the family didn't immediately get concerned because they were all possessed and thought that she was going to become like reincarnated because they had done some ritual to her. And well, I mean, essentially they murdered her, and they were probably all close to death themselves because they were all like really unwell. But because of the way the culture is in Taiwan, none of the neighbors really wanted to get involved when they sort of caught wind that something was going strange over there, because they're all very superstitious. So nobody like called the authorities until obviously the smell was so bad that people were wondering, you know, what's in this home. And I think the family had disappeared at that point. They'd left and went somewhere else. But it's a really strange story. And, you know, obviously there are sick people out there. There are bad people out there. But when you understand what happened to this family, it really does feel like they all got possessed by some entity that then took one of them. And sadly, because, you know, this woman lost her life. But yeah, so that kind of stuff can happen, man. It's really strange. And I like the analogy you're giving. I think a lot of people take movies and television for granted in the opposite way that they take, you know, something like the Bible literally, but it's sort of the same force of thinking where, you know, you sort of are restricting yourself to see something in a certain way, and that then dictates everything else you see. But
so to provide context, because this is interesting. This is interesting.
Go ahead.
Right, because there are still people who are superstitious when it comes to certain things, right? But we don't see demons walking down the road every day or at all. Let's be honest, right? But the background of this film, which is called Incantation 2022, the film is inspired by an incident in Yushan District, Kaohsiung in 2005. A family of six had claimed they were possessed by various Chinese folk religion deities and accuse each other of being possessed by demons masquerading as deities. Now, how many times has this happened throughout history? I mean, the witch trials, even till this day, people are dying because of their religion. That's how crazy religion is. That's how indoctrinated, you know, people are. Let's be honest. It's indoctrination, and people are superstitious when it comes to their religions. So they burned each other with incense, hit each other with sticks and spirit tablets, and splashed feces and urine on each other in an attempt to expel the demons. In the end, they singled out the eldest daughter and attacked her until she died of her injuries. The five remaining family members of her family were subsequently charged with the offense of abandoning a helpless person, resulting in the person's death. The case was considered one of mass hysteria. Which mass hysteria is interesting because there have been cases of mass hysteria documented throughout history. Like, that's a real thing. And going back to my research, where Gustave Le Bon, right, the father of crowd psychology, he wrote this book in 1899 called The Crowd. And in it, you know, he explains how a group of people can become a sort of living organism, an entity, if you will. And usually you see this when it comes to political unrest. We've seen this with the riots and things of that nature, right? We see this. The group, the crowd, and depending, you know, and a group has certain criteria. A town can be a crowd, a city can be a crowd, a group of 20 people can be a crowd, et cetera, et cetera. Now, what's interesting about a crowd, when it falls in this criteria, is that the group itself becomes an entity. It becomes its own organism, and it is as smart as the dumbest person in it. Now, what's interesting about his whole research is, being this guy who, again, he wasn't into the occult or anything, he talks about something that happens within the crowd that, in a way, is like possession, that takes over people. And I can't recall the name he uses for it. He's got a name for it. I've talked about it before. I can't recall it right now. But essentially, it's this force that takes over people. And that's why people in crowds and in groups, you know, we talk about peer pressure and things of that nature. Well, people will do things that they wouldn't otherwise do if they were by themselves. Okay? So when it comes to mass hysteria, I kind of think about that of like, is it some supernatural thing? Because in the way that Gustave Le Bon talks about it, he can't explain it. Oh, he calls it the contagion. The contagion, but he doesn't know what the contagion is. So, you know, back again to what we've been talking about, this contagion can probably be a meme of sorts, right? A piece of information. Because think about it. William Burroughs, and we've talked about this before, one of my favorite things that he said one time, I forgot where he said it. He was giving like a seminar or something. He said that there is a string of words, a certain combination of words that will unravel a person, that will quite literally destroy a person. How many times hasn't a person received a certain news, probably not good news, and they just go crazy? Right? They break down whatever it is. So there are a string of words. And that's all of reality, really. What makes a good salesman a good salesman? That they're able to talk to you and manipulate you into buying whatever it is that they want you to buy. And it works on you because they use that's alchemy, bro. They use the right combination of words in the right cadence, in the right time limit, in the right time frame, at the right time to influence your decision. And they, in a way, manipulated your reality as a result of that. Now, when we talk about manipulating reality, I'm not talking about stopping space and time and opening up a portal like freaking Doctor Strange or whatever. Does that exist? I don't know. Maybe it doesn't. But you still influence someone's outcome at the end of the day by speaking. And you can put that into context with politics, religion, school, your job, whatever. You can put that into context. A movie. What makes a movie good? Oh, well, the plot line was... the script was good, right? The way they spoke, everything that happened was good. It's all alchemy, bro. It's the way of finding the right combination of things to make a change. Now, I have a couple. I wanted to talk about a couple. Let me see if they have So during the medieval period, the earliest studied cases linked with epidemic hysteria are the dancing manias of the Middle Ages, including St. John's Dance and Tarantism. They were supposed to be associated with spirit possession or the bite of a tarantula. Those with dancing mania would dance in large groups, sometimes for weeks at a time. The dancing was sometimes accompanied by stripping, howling, and making of obscene gestures, or reportedly laughing or crying to the point of death. Dancing mania was widespread over Europe, bro. This is a medieval period. People were dancing to death, laughing to death.
Mm-hmm.
That's bizarre, bro.
Yeah, I don't know what that is.
That's crazy, but that's another, again, that's a form of mass hysteria. And between the 15th and 19th centuries, instances of motor hysteria were common in nunneries. The young women that made up these covenants were sometimes forced by their family. Once accepted, they took vows of chastity and poverty. Their lives were highly regimented and often marked by strict disciplinary action. The nuns would exhibit a variety of behaviors usually attributed to demonic possession. They would often use crude language and exhibit suggestive behaviors. One covenant's nuns would regularly meow like cats. Priests were often called to exorcise demons. I mean, this has been going on for a long time now, bro. Is it demons, though? Like, or is it like mental problem? They just told them, like, hey, listen, you're going to be forced to never have a relationship with a man, right? Chastity. You're going to be poor, and you're going to live in this building for the rest of your life. I think I would go crazy, too.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And now it's demons if you go crazy.
Right. Well, I think that's, you know, one of the strangeness of medieval times is there's so much weird, you know, laws and from the church and from the governments or monarchies, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It's, yeah, I'm not surprised people were going nuts, but wow, what a twisted turn we just went down. How did we get there from Steven Seagal?
Incantation.
Well, let's get back to the Steven Seagal movies before I...
So yeah, go check out The Creation of God's Kingdom of Storms. Check that out.
Yes.
And report back to us. Yes. Amazing. Thank you, Mark, for showing me that. And also watch, what was the other one? Triple R?
Oh, no. Please don't watch that.
Yes.
So, all right. So the thing about Steven Seagal's movies is there's really only five or six that are good. He's the type of actor who just never could put it down. And after like 2000, all of his movies are pretty much garbage.
You were talking about Aikido as well. You never, I don't think you finished Aikido, the spiritual.
Well, I mean, it's interesting. We went from Aikido to Investiture of the Gods and Incantation. Cause yeah, that is all related. And you know, Aikido was actually started by a cult leader. So to bring
really
strange Asian stuff. Yeah. I mean, we don't have to go fully into detail, so people should, because I want people to listen to the interview I did with John DeLuca about Aikido. But yeah, it was started by a guy named Ueshiba, and I believe he was connected to like some cult leader or, yeah, there's religious influences. The Omoto Kyo religion, a Neo-Shinto movement, which was influenced or yeah, so Onisabaru Deguchi, this guy was like a religious cult leader and he influenced the founder of Aikido. So
check
there,
this out. The following year he had a profound spiritual experience stating that, quote, a golden spirit sprang up from the ground, right, veiled my body and changed my body into a golden one. After this experience, his martial arts technique became gentler with a greater emphasis on control of key. These guys are Dragon Ball Z, bro. They're just like, or Naruto.
He's based on, dog. I mean, they didn't just come up with all that shit on a pad and paper and turn it into a cartoon. Like, that's all based on Asian culture. But yeah, it's funny we bring it all back to Steven Seagal from there because, again, like, not all of his movies are great. I don't know. There might have been some other producers and directors around him in those first five or six films. But all of them, the first five or six films, have like a weird conspiracy angle to them. I mean, even Under Siege, which is kind of about, it's about a Navy SEAL. There's like Playboy bunnies, there's CIA assassinations. he does another film called Marked for Death, where his hometown is taken over by a posse of Jamaican drug dealers who are using a Jamaican syncretic religion similar to Haitian voodoo. It's called Obeya. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah, so there's that, Marked for Death. Hard to Kill, he's a detective who basically gets blackmailed by a corrupt senator, and he has to go and get this blackmail tape and take, you know, justice. And so all of his films, I mean, and there's one about the mob and New York City and all the corruption there, but all of his films are right on the money with some of these conspiracies, these, at least these first five or six. When it starts to go downhill is when he does the direct-to-video films, and one of them is kind of interesting. He plays an immunologist who has to race against time to find a cure for an active viral outbreak, which traces back to a militia leader who injects himself with a deadly virus. So yeah, there's, and I guess the film concludes with Steven Seagal realizing that there's a flower in the area that has the cure. So they fly helicopters over the town and drop flowers on all the people. So yeah, that's, you could see that's where maybe things start to go downhill, but his movies are interesting. And I wonder if it wasn't having something to do with that, that he got this bad reputation in Hollywood. Like, here's this guy exposing the DEA, the FBI, corruption, all the CIA. Like, and what do we know about the film industry? I mean, it's completely bought and sold by the military, right? So what is really going on with Steven Seagal? Is there something he's trying to tell us? I think in these first six films, Above the Law, Hard to Kill, Marked for Death, Out for Justice, Under Siege 1 and 2, On Deadly Ground, which he directed himself, and that one's all about oil companies who are basically taking Native Americans' land in Alaska. And, you know, he basically goes through this entire oil refinery and kills like every single bad guy single-handedly, while this Native American chick just follows him with a giant duffel bag. And everybody in the thing is like, this guy's so hard to kill. Like, it's incredible that he's like, he's so close to us. Like, it's so like over the top crazy how these people are like depicted, because they're all like high security assets. They all have, you know, CIA backgrounds, and that's what, you know, every single character he plays is that guy, and everybody in these films are like that. So it's kind of interesting, the world he's trying to show us through his films. It reminds me of one of these books by Jim Hogan called Spooks, The Haunting of America, The Private Use of Secret Agents, which maybe we can talk about that book on a future episode. But yeah, man, I don't know. I'm putting it out there. We talked about Nick Cage, and then you ended up meeting his son. So who knows? Maybe we put it out there, we'll end up getting Steven Seagal on the podcast for an interview. If anybody out there listening knows Steven Seagal or has an in with Steven Seagal, just hit me up on Instagram. I'm really easy to find at My Family Thinks I'm Crazy.
You know, I'm actually going to check out some of Steven Seagal's movies, because I've never
Right?
I like watching, one of my guilty pleasures is watching, not bad movies, but bad movies, because I want to experience the badness for myself, right? Like, even I want to see how ridiculous it is. Like a Vampire's, what's the one by Nick Cage, Vampire's Kiss, whatever, like one of the first movies he came out, like how crazy that movie is, like how bizarre that movie is, and I just want to experience it. So I might check out some of Steven Seagal's stuff, because I have watched many of Nick Cage's movies.
When I say his direct-to-video movies are bad, I don't mean like they're funny bad. Like, his good movies are already kind of like that. Like, when his bad movies are bad, like, they're just like really like bad, like not worth watching bad. So that's the warning I'll give for people who want to do the same. Like, keep it pre-2000s if you really want to enjoy Steven Seagal. Otherwise, you're just going to hate him. If you watch like the 2000s,
you know, one with Mike Tyson, bro. I just saw you did one with Mike Tyson in 2017.
That, those are like the joke ones that he's done. Like, I mean, it's pretty much a joke at this point. So,
because the latest Nick Cage movie that I saw was 9mm.
Mm.
And 9mm is interesting because it's about the snuff film industry, which is something that is quote unquote an urban legend. Like, oh, snuff films don't exist. It's like to think that they don't exist is such a ridiculous thing because if, especially now with technology, now I'm not talking about like accident videos or anything like that. And I recently watched this YouTuber was talking about like gore.com and like all these other, you know, these websites that we grew up on, the Wild Wild West internet, where it was like, you know, two girls, one cup, or the BME Pain Olympics, like all that crazy shit that we watched, you know, two guys, one hammer, like all that stuff. That's kind of different. Well, Two Guys, One Hammer would be considered a snuff film because it's two dudes murdering people on
film. We don't need to go into the details. People can, they don't need to know.
Point being is that to think that they don't exist and that people aren't recording these things is ridiculous. Like, I think people are, and that I believe there is a market. And so in this movie, 9mm, Nick Cage goes down that rabbit hole and he tries to find these people who created a legitimate snuff film. And then he just like takes them out. Right. Like it's like a whole thing. Right. And right. Nick Cage also making movies about real things, reality. That was the '90s probably. Right. Like trying to expose the truth about a conspiracy. Like snuff films are a conspiracy, but here he is making a movie about it, about finding some people who legitimately did that. He tries to take him out, right? So maybe Seagal is on that same frequency. And maybe, Mark, maybe that's why it doesn't go so well for him. Because if you look at Nick Cage's career, not saying that he hasn't been successful. I mean, I think National Treasure.
He's more successful than Seagal, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, I would say so, right? I think a lot of his movies are incredible. But he does have a sort of sick stigma around him where it's like, oh,
right.
A lot of people don't like Nick Cage. They're like, oh, he's a terrible actor. He's not good, blah, 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 like whatever. I think he's great. I think he's one of the most dynamic and fluid actors that there are in Hollywood who can play many, many roles. I mean, he can play the villain. He can play the good guy and all in between, right? Yeah. So, yeah, again, back again to this whole concept of making movies based on conspiracies and trying to expose the truth by going through Hollywood. And maybe that's why he's been... Oh, you're saying there is usually a hit piece campaign and a disinfo campaign like, around these people.
You know, they see a guy like Seagal doing these projects, and then over time, yeah, they make fun of him, they mock him, they even get him into roles where they know it's going to fail. Like, there's a couple movies that he's credited for doing that explicitly say, like, Seagal was supposed to do it but chose not to after being advised by his Buddhist, like, spiritual teacher. So,
wait, what? Is that real?
Yeah, it says that on his Wikipedia for the Prince of Central Park film that he was supposed to be in the film, but his spiritual advisor told him not to. But Harvey Keitel was in that movie, so it wasn't like totally like C-list venture.
Yeah.
But anyways, so yeah, Steven Seagal, there might be more down that rabbit hole, brother, but you got to watch a couple of his films or just one, and then we'll come back to it. But I feel like that is an Illuminati confirmed
Illuminati confirmed
episode, if I ever heard one. I can't say that I think Seagal is Illuminati confirmed, though. That the
we won't know yet. We have to get him on the show.
That, yeah. So don't think I'm saying that, folks. But you out there, if you have an opinion on Seagal, you think there's a movie that I didn't mention that we should know about Seagal, let me know. Hit us up at My Family Thinks I'm Crazy on Instagram. Juan, tell the people where they can find you and support you, brother.
www.tjojp.com. Find all my stuff on there. I'm live most Thursday nights over on my YouTube channel, Juan on Juan, and the Juan on Juan Media YouTube channel as well. Find me on there.
Sick ass. Right on. I love it. Juan, it's always great talking to you, brother. I'm sorry I got to cut this one short, but I am starving. We got to eat. And it's 4th of July when this episode's coming out. So if you're in the USA, go outside. Have a great day if you're listening to this on the day that it comes out. If you're not listening to it on the day it comes out, well, thanks for listening to the show. There's other episodes you can listen to next, and I hope you do. Until then, immerse yourself in the moment wherever you are in the now. All right. Ladies and gentlemen, that was my conversation with Juan Ayala. A little short. I have another episode on the way. It's going to be out within the next couple of days. If you want a sneak preview of that, you got to sign up on the Patreon or the Substack. I had a gentleman on the show named Rolling John from Iceland, and I'm going to be putting my interview with him on the Patreon first. So sign up there, and thank you for listening to the My Family Thinks I'm Crazy podcast. Go follow Juan at the Juan on Juan podcast. And if you like Juan and I together, you're in luck. Him and I do a ton of shows on our Patreons. So go and sign up at My Family Thinks I'm Crazy on Patreon. That's patreon.com/MFTIC. And you can find this episode ad-free and a bunch of bonus episodes that Juan and I have done together. So go and check that out. And until next episode, immerse yourself in the moment wherever you are in the now.
Messages. Hey Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system, so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.